This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 32 unread emails in your inbox, one from your boss, one from your mother, and 30 from spammers with all manner of improbable offers. Your winnings are waiting. Dream Girls for you, No Risk Casino, and Viagra in many varieties of spelling. Roughly 80% of all email traffic is spam. And those pesky unsolicited emails are not just annoying, they cost you and your employer time and money. Today, the war on spam, why we're losing, and a chilling look into the future. Here's a hint: turn off your cell phones. Later in the hour, it's hot, hot, hot. We're not talking about spam, but the temperature in much of the country. We'll talk to the tired and sweaty folks who work outside in this weather, sometimes in a giant bird costume. But first, spam on the lam. Tell us your spam woes and how you do battle with your bulk mail. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. And we begin with Declan McCullough, a correspondent for CNETnews.com. He joins us from the studios at CNET in San Francisco. Declan, always nice to have you on the program.
My pleasure.
3 years ago, a very smart guy by the name of Bill Gates predicted the spam problem would be solved by 2006. Boy, I'm glad that problem's over with.
We can thank Bill Gates for being exactly right, just like when he at least supposedly predicted we only needed something like 640 kilobytes of RAM in our computers. But no, it's anything but over, and the prospect is really not that great going forward.
Well, what happened? It's gotten much worse.
Well, it's a difficult problem to solve because of the way email was created way back in the day. I mean, the roots of email go back to the early 1970s on what was what became the internet. And it was created during basically a happier, friendlier time, and you didn't have to worry about people spoofing other people. You didn't have to verify that email came from who it claims to have come from. And so we sort of are now struggling with the results of these early, friendly, academic days of email. So what can we do? I mean, the anti-spam advocates are trying a lot of different things. One of them is sort of creating a reputation. Is your domain name known as a good, legitimate source of email? Another is maybe paying something. Pay a penny an email message, and all of a sudden, the problem of spam should go away.
Yeah, but in a way, email is a byproduct of one of the aspects of the internet that most people adore, and that is its democracy. Anybody can reach anybody else.
And that's all great until your email inbox has 1,000 Viagra spam messages.
And, of course, there is an awful lot going on. Let me ask you this. Does anybody buy any of these things?
Well, I don't. I tell everyone I know not to. But the sad answer is yes. It only takes such a minuscule percentage of people to buy things to make spam profitable. And just think of it. I mean, so much spam nowadays is sent via compromised computers. You basically take over someone's computer running an old version of Windows. It doesn't have the right security patches. All of a sudden, that computer connected to a cable modem is a very efficient spam bot or spam zombie. So it can pump out these messages. The cost to break into this computer is virtually nil. The cost to send messages is virtually nil. You're piggybacking off of someone else's connection. And so because the costs are so low, even a very small return on investment can make it profitable.
Mm-hmm. So that that Nigerian business deal, somebody is still buying into this?
Yes. No, I mean, it seems hard to believe, but you see, I mean, cases in the news all the time, and we've written about a bunch at news.com about how people are basically fleeced by Nigerian spammers. I mean, it's probably not the tech-savvy folks, the people in their teens or 20s, but you have older folks online. You have folks who might be just getting on the internet for the first time, as hard as that is to believe, and there's a sucker born every minute.
And there's another thing that has happened. Indeed, some people trace the problem of emails of late to this, what you were talking about, seizing people's computers, using them as spam bots. And those you can get, hey, you've got a greeting card from so-and-so, and you open it up, and unknowingly, you've contaminated your computer.
Exactly right, especially if it contains an exe or scr or some other sort of executable file that can it basically carry an infectious bit of code. I mean, nowadays, companies are getting much better at filtering this. Microsoft's finally getting better. But you just have to be very, very careful about clicking on attachments from people you don't know or even people you do know, and you don't expect them to be sending you attachments.
Hmm. Here's an email we got from Gary in Portland, Oregon. After only 7 months, my email is loaded with spam. Since I only give my email to friends, I wonder how it gets out. Do joke emails forward back to spam senders? Are my friends' email address books compromised? Can internal routers be invaded to strip addresses? Are there address receipts being sent just by opening spam? And I think the answer to all those questions is yes.
Yeah, it's probably true. I mean, let's go through the possibilities one by one. I mean, first, if his friends' computers are infected, either via a worm that connects directly to the computer or by a malicious attachment they opened, then all of a sudden, the contents of their files and the contents of their address book are open to spammers for their perusal. A second possibility is that Gary has an email address like gary356@aol.com, mm-hmm. and it's very easy for spammers to do what's known as a dictionary attack. They'll just start with, Al1, go all the way up to Al101 or 1001, Gary1, go all the way up to Gary300. So one way to reduce spam is probably to get your own domain name and then use an address you don't give out to very many people. And so instead of trying a dictionary attack at AOL.com, there's a lot of people there. It's worth it for the spammers. They won't be targeting your domain. It's just the pickings aren't as rich.
Well, stopping spam is big business. David Cowan is a Silicon Valley venture capitalist who invests in computer security. He's a co-founder of Versign and Postini, among others, and frequently blogs on this topic. He joins us now from Stanford University Studios. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Happy to be here.
And David, you've been following this for a while now. What techniques do people use to stop spam, and do any of them work?
When you ask whether they work, it depends how you think about that. They certainly work in diminishing the amount of spam, but there are no silver bullets. None of them can eliminate it, and the bad guys just frequently adapt to what we do. You've got some of the anti-spam measures that are implemented by the leading companies like Postini and others, mm-hmm. Include rule filters. So these are programs that try to look at an email and determine whether it's a spam or whether it's a legitimate email by looking for keywords like Viagra or free, classifying emails that they know are spam. So if they see similar ones, they can identify them. Mm-hmm. But this is really just treading water. Because the spammers get very creative about obfuscating their message. They send out emails where they use different keywords, where they put in text that seems like a real legitimate email, and then they stick their message before or after it. Now they're even putting out dynamic emails, so we're all getting personalized spam. And that makes it more difficult to identify.
Spam that says, Dear David Cowan, would you like to buy some V1 Agra?
Exactly. We might see our names in the subject header. Another recent development is to, as we've heard, embed the messages within attachments. In fact, just yesterday, Postini's been tracking a very successful attack over the order of hundreds of millions of messages. Using a PDF attachment, mm-hmm. Which is something that a lot of spam filters are unable to detect. As a result of all of these, even though there are lots of methods and technologies that we can deploy, the bad guys are really winning the war.
Somebody's phone is ringing out there, and they're still trying to get you. So let's turn off our phones, everybody, all right? I hate to sound like the usher in a movie theater, but go ahead. David Cowan, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
It's getting worse. If we were to look at a weather report of the internet, I mean, you'd have to say right now that it's very stormy weather. The amount of spam is up 2.5 times just since last fall, and we're not even in Q4, which is the hurricane season.
Q4, the hurricane season, because as I understand it, a lot of new students go to school with new computers and very high-speed connections.
That's right. In the fourth quarter, you get that effect. But really, more importantly, you just get a lot of people doing their holiday shopping online. And that creates a lot more online traffic and also a lot more opportunity for spammers and phishers to steal our credit card numbers and our identities.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is recently there's been at least I've been getting a series of ads that seem utterly incomprehensible. I think it's English, but even my strangest poetry writing friends did not write anything like this. What's going on there?
Well, you know, selling things is one of the objectives of the spammers, but the spammers are also up to other no good as well. And we just noticed the messages that are trying to sell things, or at least the ones that look like they're trying to sell things. But spammers are also up to other no good, such as identity theft. Some of the messages are have links in them which bring people to websites so that our computers can be infected by malware, and our computers can then be compromised and recruited as a bot into an army of these bots. And these armies are then rented out. The spam may include malware that just resides in our computer and steals our passwords. These bots of computers are then rented out to other spammers who can use them to deliver more spam or to do what's called denial of service attacks on other computers. Not everything, it may look like it's not a very effective advertisement, but it may be still a very effective phishing attack or malware attack.
Phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, phishing for somebody's identity in this account, and malware being mal, meaning this, in the sense, bad.
That's right. That's right. These are other ways for people who wish to flaunt the rules and protocols of good behavior to make money on the internet, and that's to steal our identities or to sell products.
We're talking about spam, which is mostly located on your computer, but you might want to rethink that cell phone. To get to more of your calls, we'll go to 800-989-8255 after we come back. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, spam. Of course, not talking about canned meat or the Monty Python song. Junk email is annoying, costs you time and money. The worst part, it's getting worse. Who's doing it? How they get away with it? Who buys this stuff? That's our focus today. Our guests are Declan McCullough, correspondent with CNetNews.com, David Cowan, a venture capitalist in Silicon Valley who invests in computer security. Got spam? Let us know what you're doing to stop it. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org and check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's get Laura on the line. Laura's calling us from St. Louis.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Hi. I was wondering how the effect of the CAN Act Compliance Act affected the actual amount of spam that we're getting. From what I understand, the FTC attempted to check to stamp down on the amount of spam that we're getting. I was just wondering how that plays into the amount of spam today.
Backing and filling, the CAN Spam Act was passed by Congress, I think, Declan McCullough, 3 years ago?
I think it was 4 at this point in December.
Yes. All right. That was close to 3 years ago. In any case, what's the effect of that been? Has it been effective in stopping spam?
Well, Congress passed a law and it worked perfectly. Spam has ended overnight. No, seriously. The CAN Spam Act has not been a resounding success. It actually preempted, and that has overruled some state laws. I'm thinking of one in California, for instance, that actually prohibited spam. CAN Spam, the federal act, legalized spam. It said it's okay to send spam as long as you include like opt-out links and things like that. So in that way, it really was not all that wonderful. But it did tighten standards for things like mobile spam and taking over someone's computer to use in spam. So it's been at best mixed and probably less than a success. The FTC has filed a bunch of lawsuits over spammers and spyware purveyors and so on. Sanford Wallace. The FTC has gone after him twice, more for spyware than spam, but it's sort of a related form of deviltry. And there's, but I mean, the law can only go so far. I mean, this is a technical problem, and technical solutions are probably the best. The U.S. law can't really do much against spammers in Russia, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. David Cowan, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. These laws, they may diminish the amount of spam coming from U.S.-based computers, but all it does is just push the spam off overseas, where it can get to our computers just as easily. It's, you know, trying to legislate away spam is about as effective as prayer as a defense. You know, the there are other defenses as well, like these payment systems and other ones that were mentioned that mm-hmm. people would pay for email, and those have also been also ineffective. It's just really difficult to try to implement a new protocol on top of internet email. Because in order for these new schemes to work, where everybody pays a penny for an email, we'd all have to adopt it simultaneously on the same day. As long as we open our inboxes to people who don't adopt it, then there's no incentive for people to adopt it.
It would have to be universal. It'd have to be around the world, not just in.
To be around the world, and you'd have to do it all at once. It would be kind of like changing from driving on the right side of the road to the left side of the road. You have to do it all at once.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anyway, Laura, thanks very much for the call.
Neil?
Yes?
And I'd like to mention, I helped solve my spam problem by signing up for a company called Lashback. They have an unsubscribe button, and it's more of a reputation company, mm-hmm. but it has decreased the amount of spam I received tremendously.
Well, good for you.
I don't know if anybody's aware of that company.
David Cowan, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, there are several companies that are trying to track reputations of senders on the internet, and some of the larger internet service providers and the portals like AOL and Yahoo are using the information from those companies who are tracking reputation. But the truth is that those companies are really only effective against senders that you can identify. So it might be good for stopping what you consider to be spam from someone like American Express, but it's not going to stop the Viagra ads and casino ads and cheap med advertisements.
Here's this related email from John in California. Is it true that clicking the unsubscribe link on a spam message can then add you to other spam lists?
Absolutely.
Well, that's perverse. I guess they don't care, do they? And Laura, thanks very much for the call. Good luck.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And let's go to Jordan. Jordan's with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
I'm calling because I actually had an experience with one of the Mailbots identity theft that you were speaking of just before. Anyone with a PayPal account that gets email from claiming to be PayPal saying that your account access is limited or you need to verify your password, I fell for one of the first ones, and thankfully my bank was on top of it, and they stopped it. But I got a call the next week from my bank asking me if I'd been to Romania recently, and saying that my account had been attempted to be accessed three or four times within the same day from Romania. And the same thing happened again. So just a heads up to anything from PayPal.
And some of these look very
to be PayPal.
And some of these look extremely authentic, Declan McCullough.
It did. It's very authentic.
It's true. Even experts sometimes can be fooled by this. To respond to Jordan's point, the way to do it is to be very suspicious when you have something from Amazon or PayPal or your bank or your credit unions or credit card company saying, we need an account update, click here to log in. Don't do it. Don't click on it. Instead, let's say you use Bank of America, just go to your web browser and manually type in paypal.com or bankofamerica.com. Do it that way so then you can avoid some of these sort of obfuscated links that can take you to a phishing site that will steal your account information.
I'm afraid, though, even that is not a safe haven. There's an attack called DNS farming that allows crooks to actually redirect traffic on the internet. So when you go to Amazon.com, it might take you to another website. Or if you have malware on your computer, which most of us have, you can see it if you run an anti-spyware program, then the malware can do the redirection and send you to a fake Amazon site.
In other words, it'll look like the Amazon site. It just won't be one. All right. That's depressing. Jordan, thanks very much for the call, and better luck next time.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Let's try Craig. Craig's with us from Cameron, Missouri.
Hello. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
I have an interesting take on this whole thing. I've had three different – I own three different email addresses, one of which I with Yahoo I've had for close to 10 years. And I ran stuff on Windows forever and ever, as everybody did. And what I wound up doing when I moved out west, out here to Missouri, I have a computer that I run nothing but Linux on. Nobody in that world out there that writes all these programs writes stuff for open source code software. I have not had any problem whatsoever with phishing, with spam, or anything on my computer with my other two email accounts that I set up after I started running a total Linux computer.
David Cowan, is that an effective defense against spam?
Well, it is an effective defense, but it's equivalent to saying I don't want to be exposed to billboards on the highway, so I'm only going to take side streets. The reason that it's effective is that there are so few individuals that use Linux that the attackers just aren't going after it. There's nothing special about open source software that makes it immune from these attacks. In fact, as Mozilla's Firefox browser has become very popular, the bad guys are able to infiltrate Firefox just as easily as they're able to infiltrate Internet Explorer. So while it may be an effective defense against spam or phishing or other attacks, I don't think it's really one that preserves the value of popular, easy software for most people.
And it sounds great. Go ahead, Declan.
I think there is actually something special about it. Microsoft Windows was not designed from the ground up to be a secure operating system, networked, etc. And Apple's OS X and Linux are, their roots go back to Unix way back in the day. That's always been proof against some of these threats. And so even unless you really need Windows software, these can be an effective way to protect yourself. I don't think that my Mac that I'm looking at right now is infected by malware. Very few are.
Yeah, I've gone through my computer, and I've had it online for a year, and I've got nothing on it to my old Windows computers.
David?
Yeah, well, it really goes to how popular the technology is. Linux just simply, has a tiny, tiny percentage of market share compared to Windows as a desktop operating system. And if you look at Macintosh certainly has more, but there are certainly a lot of attacks against Macintosh that work well and are known to be out there in the wild. And in fact, there are now companies like Intego that are doing quite well selling those antivirus defenses just for Macintosh. If you look at a technology like Firefox, which is open source and is now very popular, the vulnerabilities in Firefox are really just as numerous as the vulnerabilities in Microsoft software. Despite the initial hype about Firefox, it really isn't any more secure than IE.
Craig, thanks very much for the call.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Is there no way to track this financial traffic? David Cowan, you were talking about these bot networks that are being not just created for specific products, but being loaned to other spammers. Is it not possible to track who's running these things?
Well, we're each responsible for our own computers, and so the answer to that is no. We each have to do it ourselves. Now, I would say that consumers have been pretty good recently about buying and installing more and more antivirus types of products. And big corporations, for them, it's now standard. In fact, in some cases, even regulatorily mandated that they have to really integrate leading edge technologies for filtering out spam and viruses and other kinds of attacks. But there are still big swaths of space out there where the criminals are free to play. And right now, I think the biggest one is really in the small business market. So there, most companies have fewer than 500 employees.
Sure.
And they don't have big information technology staffs who are able to assess and integrate all of these defense measures. And so within that market, there really are many, many, many exposed computers. And now increasingly small businesses are looking to really outsource their email and their security infrastructure to companies like Perimeter and others. But they're still way, way behind where the larger corporations are.
David Cowan, a venture capitalist who invests in computer security. And also our other guest is Declan McCullough, correspondent at CNetNews.com. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email we have from Michael in San Francisco. With the growth of wireless handheld devices, what kind of security precautions are being implemented to halt the growth of spam in this area? And David Cowan, I know this is something you're concerned about.
Yes, and right now I think people are thinking about the threat to mobile devices from what I would consider to be traditional spam, the kinds of spam we see today. However, I believe that what we've seen in the form of email spam is unfortunately really just the tip of the iceberg. And I say that because I think that it's just it's my unfortunate prediction that we are going to see an entirely new and much, much bigger and much more annoying and impactful wave of spam on our telephones. And I don't mean as emails, I mean as telephone calls.
Calls.
And this is arising because of internet telephony. It used to be, I mean, we all find it annoying when someone calls during dinner and tries to sell us something.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is that those calls are limited, one, by the law, but more importantly, by the fact that it costs money to hire a representative on the phone and to make a phone call. Well, that's all really going away now. With internet telephony, people can make free phone calls from around the world.
Internet telephony, outside, what most people call VoIP or voice over internet protocol?
Exactly. VoIP, people have heard about Skype and other kinds of technologies that allow us to make telephone calls over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this also allows the bad guys to call us at home or on our cell phones and to do it without any cost at all. And if you have a computer make the calls and allow the receiver of the call to then buy their service, it could be a voice service like a psychic or a dating service or a chat line or something, or it could be it could connect them over to somebody who's going to sell them something or just drive them to a URL on the web. Now that they can make those calls to us, they can do it without any cost at all. And those are actually those demand our attention even more effectively than an email because our phone rings. And the kinds of countermeasures that we have today against email spam simply aren't going to work. We're not going to be able to examine the payload of the message because the payload of a telephone call doesn't come until after we answer it. Simply because I think there are people out there who want to demand our attention because it's going to be very easy to demand our attention by ringing our telephones, I think it simply has to happen. And when it does, it's going to greatly impair the value of telephones for us.
Mm.
We're not going to have any choice but to turn off our ringers. And it may mark the end of real-time telephone conversations.
And I have to apologize after yelling at you guys earlier for having your cell phones on. Well, that was my phone ringing. I do apologize for that. I forget to turn mine off every once in a while, too. But Declan McCullough, if the kinds of things that David Cowan is talking about, three, 4 years ago, people were so in arms about the spam. Well, that's how they got Congress to pass a law. Is there the kinds of things he's talking about, is there likely to be some sort of, tsunami in reaction to this?
Well, I should point out that VoIP spam is a non-existent problem right now, but he's certainly right that it could be. And it is a more difficult problem to solve in some ways, but it's not impossible. I have a friend who's a system administrator in Baltimore who just simply has configured his phone to only allow calls from people you know. That is his mobile phone, and so that's a very nice way of arranging things. As long as you only have a closed circle of acquaintances and family members who call you. In terms of the legal response, I mean, we saw how sort of useless canned spam was in actually doing anything to stop the flow of spam. It's doubled a number of times since the Canned Spam Act was passed in December 2003. I mean, you can imagine some sort of law being passed against the VoIP spam if it becomes a a problem, but you have the Russia problem, and that is how do you, even if you can stop all U.S.-based spammers from using VoIP, how do you stop the ones in Russia?
Mm. Declan McCullough, we'll worry about this for weeks until we have you back on. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Declan McCullough, a correspondent for CNETnews.com. He joined us from a studio at CNET in San Francisco. Our thanks as well to David Cowan, a venture capitalist who joined us today from Stanford University. Appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you.
And when we come back, how hot is it if you're working outside? It's the talk of the nation from NPR News.